I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 148 for the weekend starting 17 June 2016.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of intelligent technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we chat about Microsoft's blockbuster acquisition of LinkedIn.
Also this week, 4DI Capital's new tech fund, LifeQ's deal with Garmin, and Showmax on DSTV.
Let's get the show on the road.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Different setting for today's recording.
Yeah, we are trying to switch things up a little bit, actually experimenting with a little bit of, I don't know, should I say it?
Yeah, go for it.
360 video. We're just playing around with the rig that I'm using for some other video work. And if you see this, it means that the test went well. If you don't see it, keep an eye out for next week when we do it again.
Yeah, so there's a Rechard's got how many GoPros are connected to that rig?
So there are 6 GoPro Euro 4 Black Editions,
right?
And on a Freedom 360 rig, you can buy it online at Freedom 360, and it's essentially a company that built this 3D printed casing that you can put all the cameras on, like you can see there.
Yeah,
they're each basically pointing in a different direction. And then you stitch them together with some beautiful software called AutoPano.
Okay.
Not a very cheap exercise, I must tell you.
But sure. Six GoPros in there, right? It's going to set you back a good 40, 50 grand, right?
Yeah, there's going to be a few rand there. Yeah. So now it's now just trying to shoot some cool video and then see what we can do with it. Really cool. Experimenting.
Well, we'll see how this comes out. If it if it looks good, we'll dump it onto YouTube. If you don't see a video link with this particular podcast, then you'll know the video didn't look as nice as we thought it was going to look. But
maybe I'll just do a clip, if anything. I think we're just trying to figure out also kind of length and stuff. Do you want to watch a 20-minute 360 degree video? I don't know. But we'll see.
Let's see how it works out. But it's glowing red and ominously in the corner of this office. We're sitting at the Nav World offices in Randburg, and it's been interesting to see how this turns out. Wait for the camera.
yeah, we'll also do a photograph of it so you can see what it looks like.
Cool.
But yeah.
So let's get into this week's news. And actually, before we do the news, and must apologize, by the way, last week we did our quiz and we forgot to give you the answers. We'll endeavor not to do that in this week's episode. So let's get kicked off with that. Rechard, do you want to ask the first question?
Yes. Who is providing most of the money for 4DI Capital's new tech fund?
Second question, which company other than Microsoft reportedly made a bid this week to buy LinkedIn?
The third question, Naspers is said to be planning to sell which online auction website business?
Fourth question, Sony has launched a new flagship Android smartphone in South Africa this past week. What is it called?
And I don't know if you would have missed this because it's quite big news, but what is the name of Apple's new desktop operating system announced at WWDC earlier this week?
And we're not looking for macOS, we're looking for the code name. Great. Well, let's get started with the show. And there's one headline that's really dominated tech news worldwide this week, and that's Microsoft's $26.2 billion, that's 400 billion rand, acquisition of LinkedIn. When I first saw the headline pop across my terminal this week, I thought, what?
Yeah, that's a lot of money. But I guess LinkedIn has been a hot property, even though, you know, it's been highly contested. I guess people don't quite know what to do with it. But it's been a very popular network.
Do you use LinkedIn?
From time to time, I find it a valuable tool to kind of just quickly look at people, who they are, where they're from, who they worked with.
As a journalist, I find that invaluable.
Yes.
You want to do some research on someone you're interviewing or someone you're writing about, you just pop onto LinkedIn to see their career history. That's a brilliant aspect of it. But personally, I find I don't use it. Maybe it's because I'm not a corporate job hopping type. All I seem to do on there is go on there to accept friend requests or contact requests and then leave again. And I know I get a lot of spam from LinkedIn. They're a very spammy network. I know they can probably be adjusted in the settings, but certainly by default they send a lot of spam to your inbox.
A lot of people just send out requests to try and meet new people. But I do find it useful just to look at people's history, who they are, and it's really more of a networking tool, just to kind of get that quick overview of the background. More than anything else, I also don't really use it for the job aspect. But I guess we're not in that industry. We're not looking for work. And I know a lot of people that are actually out there. Active, you know, they use it, you know, especially in the corporate side. You know, when you have worked with various corporate entities. It's a good place to kind of keep track of for people to see your experience. I think they're going to get a lot of value out of it. But LinkedIn on its own, it's also been, I don't know, it kind of needs something else to make it a much better social network. It's not the best user interfaces I've worked with.
Yeah.
A little tricky to use pages for business.
Yeah.
So hopefully Microsoft can inject some different life into it. I just hope they put the good stuff in and not take the good stuff out.
I just have to wonder what the ultimate play here is for Microsoft, though. I mean, it can't just be about buying LinkedIn and building that. There has to be some sort of integration play here as well with Microsoft services, be it their cloud offerings, be it Microsoft Office, be it Link, or what was that acquisition they made of that Office IM platform a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it wasn't Link.
It wasn't Link. It was something else.
Not Yammer or any of those.
You know, I can imagine those tools and maybe Skype as well being integrated somehow, but I can't quite picture in my mind how that integration would happen.
Yeah, I think Office, the business side is probably the strongest angle for me because, you know, with their business software tools, Office, I guess they're trying to create a social connection there with their software somewhere. But maybe also it's just a matter of owning a network that they see value in, a social network they see a lot of value in.
Bill Gates made some very interesting comments on Friday. He said that he sees this deal as about being about Microsoft turning the, what was his exact phrase? Let me get it up. He said something along the lines of this being the Facebook of careers, Facebook for careers.
Yes, Facebook for careers.
Which is an interesting one because, you know, LinkedIn for me is a place, is not a place I go to. I mean, Facebook is something I check in when I've got some spare time. You know, it's something I want to actually go in to see what my friends are doing and pictures they're posting and that sort of thing. I don't go to LinkedIn out of curiosity. I go there to research a specific thing. I don't go there to find out, you know, what's my friend Bob up to in his career.
Maybe they see an angle there to turn it into a place where it's careers or business only social networking. I don't know how successful that'll be. I know a lot of people, I mean, when I log on there once a week, twice a week, a lot of people are using it as kind of a newsy delivery platform for business-related stuff.
Yeah.
But even us with the stuff that we've done with Tech Central, you don't see a lot of value coming through there.
No,
I don't see a lot of eyeballs coming from LinkedIn.
No, a lot of our traffic is driven through Google Plus, funnily enough, and more through Facebook. But LinkedIn, very little.
Yeah, I see a lot of value in Facebook for that same reason. But more research tool than anything else. But let's see what they've got up their sleeves.
But it's an interesting one. It now emerges that there may have been a bidding war of some sort going on behind the scenes because. There was a report this week that, after the acquisition was announced, that Salesforce.com, which is a very fast-growing and aggressive cloud-based CRM software, business software company, suggestions that they, in fact, also were bidding for LinkedIn. So the price might have been pushed up because it's a spectacular price. It's a 50% premium to the closing price the business day before the offer was made. $26 billion, a lot of money, especially if you consider that over the last year, LinkedIn's finances have not been great. The share price has been under pressure. And I think they've been reporting an operating loss for a period of several quarters. So it's not as if Microsoft is buying a booming, flying business here. They actually are having some difficulties.
I was just looking at the user numbers, though. Do you think they could be buying this for the user base?
We've seen a lot of
applications being bought for that reason.
Sure they are.
They're sitting at about 433 million users.
Yeah. I'd like to know what percentage of that is active, daily basis. I suspect it's a tiny subset of that total.
That's the other problem with LinkedIn. I mean, a lot of times I get to a page and the person's information is outdated. So that's a very real issue with that too.
Yeah.
Maybe they just need to make it sexier.
The other worry, of course, is that Microsoft has made a number of acquisitions, blockbuster acquisitions now, that haven't worked, to put it bluntly. There was that acquisition of Aquantive a couple of years ago, which is that big advertising website, which they basically wrote off. It was a dud. They bought Nokia. We all know what happened there. Massive write-downs and job losses. It was a disaster, in effect. And now another attempt at a major acquisition. You know, they bought Skype a couple of years ago. Arguably, that was a little more successful. But, you know, this is a big company they're buying here. It's their biggest acquisition in history by far.
What's the value that we can see?
Can we trust Microsoft not to screw this one up? Like they screwed up Nokia, like they screwed up a Quantiv.
You know, I often look at these big acquisitions and I think, you know, the guy that makes the decision to buy these big companies for these massive amounts of money, maybe it's just a question of, I've got the money to buy it, I want to just get it before anybody else does.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt.
What happens.
There's no doubt Microsoft can afford it. I mean, this is an all-cash deal, right? All cash. And it's $26 billion and it only makes a fairly minor dent on Microsoft's balance sheet. They're sitting with $96 billion in cash. In Rand terms, it's 1.5 trillion Rand.
Yeah,
nice. So they've got a lot of money. So, you know, they can afford to do deals like this. The question is this the right deal for Microsoft? And I think we'll only know the answer to that question 2 or 3 years from now, once they've embedded the acquisition and done the integration work that they're planning to do.
Look, I can see Microsoft using it for the business side more than any other company, but we'll see.
And what do Microsoft's competitors do now that use LinkedIn? Do they trust Microsoft to not look at all the data of all the, you know, job hunting they're doing and all the rest of it? You know, IBM, Apple, Google. Yeah,
and those guys do a lot of business
on LinkedIn, exactly. Yeah. Oracle, they're all active on LinkedIn, and you know, now your one of your biggest competitors is you know, owns the platform. Do you continue to use it? I think Microsoft's going to very clearly have to put up some very strict Chinese walls. To ensure that there isn't that loss of
I was just thinking as you were saying that, I mean, I really just hope they don't put SharePoint in the back of this thing. that's all I have to say on that one.
Anyway, so that's the big story of the week, undoubtedly, is the acquisition of LinkedIn, and it's going to be fascinating over the coming years to see how that integration work happens and exactly how Microsoft tries to turn this platform, which I think is there's a lot of potential there, but it requires a lot of work as well.
Yeah.
And their acquisitions of the past few years have not exactly inspired that much confidence in their ability to do something like this.
Mm.
Anyway, another big story this week, coming back to South Africa, and a really positive story, I think, Rechard, was the news that MMI Holdings, which is the JSE-listed holding company of Momentum, the big health and life insurance company, and Metropolitan, and amongst another number of other companies, is investing the vast majority of a new fund to be managed by 4DI Capital, which is a Stellenbosch-based venture capital firm in which Justin Stanford and others are involved. That that fund is they've raised 256 million rand for a first close for investment in South African fintech, insurance tech, and health tech early stage and growth stage startup businesses. So a big whack of cash that's become available for investments in very specific areas, growth areas globally in the space. It'd be interesting to see, if they're able to put that full amount of money to use in the South African context specifically, because they're specifically looking at South African startups. And 4DI, this is 4DI's second fund. Their first fund, they've invested in a number of interesting businesses, including Snapt, which is the web acceleration. There's a whole lot of stuff like web acceleration and enterprise software. That business has done incredibly well. Joburg-based, they sell exclusively online. And they're in, I think, they've got 50,000 customers around the world now. So that's one of the 4DI investments. And the other one, the one I found most interesting, and I don't know if you've had a look at them, Rechard, it's a company called LifeQ. It also started out in Stellenbosch. They, this week, I'm going to talk a bit about that in a moment. They've just signed a big deal with, in fact, let's talk about it now, because it's on our notes coming up for this episode. They were also funded by 4DI Capital. Now, they've just signed a big deal with Garmin we're not sure the details yet, but it's a partnership deal. Now, LifeQ is doing some really interesting things around what they call biomathematics. It's real propeller head stuff, but they're basically looking to take the measurement of human body functions to the next level. You know, these smart device manufacturers have pretty much perfected things like measuring heart rate now that sort of thing. But these guys want to take it really to the next step, to really start to understand to really understand the metrics of your health and to really provide real feedback to both you and potentially to your insurance company as well, which I'm not sure is a good idea. So they're doing some fascinating stuff. I'd recommend just going onto Tech Central and searching LifeQ, one word, and having a read up about them. But fascinating, fascinating company signing this deal with Garmin this week, presumably to integrate their body function measurements and technology into future Garmin wearables.
Yeah, and that's that kind of technology is certainly the next peak, because everything that we I'm just looking at the article here, but everything we can't measure now. You know, there's this level of stuff. I mean, you've been playing with that scale, and even though the some of the metrics it gives you is based on your height and weight, it's not kind of the accurate body mass index or water.
Well, the BMI is right, because that's a pure calculation, but certainly your bone density and all that stuff is a guesstimate. Yeah, but you know, they're working on three technologies. I think one of them is a contact lens of some description. But they're a fascinating little startup, and well, not so little anymore. They're expanding rapidly. I think they've established offices in the US and growing quickly. So that was all part of the first fund of this 40i Capital. Snapt, of course, has also raised funds from Convergence Partners, which is the business started by Andile Ngcabo, who's the chairman of Dimension Data Africa. But I think it's great, just great news that here's a big corporate in South Africa, MMI Holdings, one of the biggest conglomerates in South Africa, investing effectively almost 250 million rand in tech startups. It can only be good for the ecosystem.
Oh yeah, very good for startups. And if you, I mean, obviously it's going to bring the best business to the front.
Mm.
Really like that.
Yeah. At the same time, they've announced that they're investing about 30 million euros in through Anthemus, which is a UK-based investment and advisory firm, to invest in similar businesses on a global basis. But good to see they're putting the money here at home as well, on betting on South African.
Oh yeah, definitely. And just coming back to the Garmin acquisition, it's interesting to note that it's the second time Garmin has looked at Stellenbosch-based tech companies.
It's not an acquisition though; it's just a a partnership at this stage. There may be an acquisition down the line, but you're right; it's the second time.
A lot of good stuff coming out of Stellenbosch.
Remind us what the other one was.
That was the bike radar, Ikubu.
Ikubu.
Yeah, they did the radar technology for bikes, and Garmin bought that and turned it into a product called the Varia.
Okay.
But yeah. Exciting technology coming out of that little town. Yeah. And good beer too, so maybe there's something.
Maybe there's a link. Anyway, maybe it's time for us to move down there.
I think so. And they've got good broadband, so we'll be able to live stream. I think that's all we need.
all we need is broadband. Could be sitting in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. As long as we've got a decent broadband connection, we can do anything.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we need to take a break. We'll be back right after this message from our sponsors.
Hello world. Hello information. Hello uploads and downloads. Hello streaming videos and low latency. Hello blogs and vlogs. Hello crystal clear video calls. Hello increased productivity. Hello online learning. Hello cloud. Hello long lost friends and missed connections. Hello limitless possibilities and instant gratification. Say hello to premium high speed fiber from Vox Telecom. Pleasure guaranteed. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Chicken or beef?
Beef, please.
Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Well, welcome back to the show. So, Rehat, did you see this announcement this week about Showmax going on to DSTV?
Yeah, that was quite an interesting kind of move.
Yeah.
I think. Backwards move almost.
Yeah.
I thought Showmax on a channel, but I guess it makes sense if you want to broaden the scope of the Showmax offering, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the announcement effectively is you can now get Showmax through an upgrade to the PVR, and it's only the latest PVR, the Explorer. You can now access Showmax provided you have an internet connection on your PVR, which means you need to get one of those little Wi-Fi dongles that DSTV sells, or you need to plug in an Ethernet cable because the box does not have Wi-Fi as standard. So they sell it, I think it's called the DSTV Connect or Connector, if I'm not mistaken, which provides Wi-Fi access. But really what you want to do if you want to, you know, stream video through your PVR is you want to hook it up to Ethernet.
Yeah, that's the way.
Because Wi-Fi is not ideal, especially if you're connecting this thing behind your TV where it's a bit hidden from your from the Wi-Fi signal. So they've announced that you can now watch Showmax on DSTV, provided you have a PVR. Explorer PVR. So seeing this integration now between NASPERS and through these NASPERS entities, we were always told that they were kind of being set up in competition with each other. Now perhaps it's suggesting that, you know, they're more synergistic than we might previously have suggested they were. But an interesting move by MultiChoice to do this, or NASPERS rather. And it raises the question of whether at some point, and I strongly suspect the answer is no, unless they're forced to by regulators, but it does raise the question about whether technically what happens if Netflix comes knocking on MultiChoice's door and say, may we please also have access to your box? Since you've shown it's not technically capable of Showmax, it'll surely be technically possible for us or any of the other video on demand companies like OnTap TV or any of the others that have launched in the last few years also to have access to that lucrative DSTV subscriber base. Now I'm 99.999% certain that MultiChoice will tell them to where to get off. But what happens that down the line if the regulators come along or if Netflix goes to the Competition Commission and says, you know, we'd like to be on this box. It's, you know, this is a competitive, you know, a necessity for us in this market. Can you force MultiChoice to provide us with access? Would that be the right thing to do? I don't know. But it's an interesting debate to have anyway, theoretical debate, because DSTV would tell Netflix to go away.
Yeah, no, definitely. But it is a very interesting move, and I almost see it as a MultiChoice trying to own that player space that Apple's done so well with Apple TV, where you know they provide a player platform. They obviously realize that DSTV subscribers also want access to these things, and I'm sure they've seen a lot of their subscribers signing up for these services to explore and see, is it worth it? By bringing it closer to home, potentially they keep the existing subscribers, make it easier for these guys to get access to these additional services. Maybe they're testing it out for future, you know, bundled type offerings. It does bring up all those other questions you raised with Netflix coming on board.
It's an interesting one, they haven't disclosed it, but it'd be interesting to know how many of their PVR users have connected those boxes to the internet. I suspect it's probably quite a small number. I would be very surprised if it's above 25%.
I agree.
But I mean, I've done it with my PVR just because I have to experiment. And it works quite well. I mean, you can watch catch up shows just streamed over the internet on your box. But certainly Showmax brings a new dimension to it, and I think it's particularly going to appeal to the non-technical audience who either couldn't be bothered or is frightened of connecting some newfangled device like an Apple TV or a Chromecast device or something else to their TV in order to access a streaming on-demand service.
I certainly think it's not a bad move from them. They're owning another part of the market. But it'll be interesting to see how
it does raise some interesting questions about what it means from a competition perspective. Especially in light of the fact that they really punted this, the fact that Showmax was going to be completely separate from MultiChoice. Now it's another service on top of MultiChoice, although you can still buy it separately, of course.
Well, hopefully we'll see some unbundling of some other packages that they can sell separately like this, and Showmax is just one of them. I don't know, we can only wish.
Anyway, so we haven't touched on it yet. Richard, I don't know if there's anything else. I thought the whole presentation was a bit meh, to put it to for lack of a better word. You watch WWDC, Apple's big developer conference this week? The Wall Street analysts that were quoted in Bloomberg and elsewhere this week about it were all quite positive about it. It all struck me as being a bit of catch-up, really. They're also all playing in this artificial intelligence space. there was a lot of catch up in terms of messaging. Both Google and Apple seem to be very worried about Facebook and its messaging capabilities.
Yeah.
Was anything else that jumped out at you? What about this copy and paste across multiple devices?
I loved a lot of the things I said, but also it kind of was a thing that we kind of expected in previous versions. So it's small increments in some of the changes and some of the new features they've brought in, which a lot of them I like, but nothing major, nothing that made me go wow. As a Mac user, I'm looking forward to the new features. It's nice to know that there'll be an enhanced functionality to my devices and my ecosystem.
I'm glad Siri's finally coming to the desktop.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what took Apple so long. I mean, Cortana's been in Windows for ages.
Yeah, it seemed like such an obvious thing to add very early on. I watched the presentation over three nights just to kind of get through it all. I really enjoyed it. But I'm trying to think, there was one thing that they spoke about that I thought was really interesting, and I think it may have been to do with the music side or the music apps.
Oh, they did relaunch Apple Music.
Yeah, and there was some, again, the kind of stuff that they should have done years ago. But as an Apple user, I'm happy for these changes. I don't know if it's wow enough to make me change my mind if I'm a user that's kind of deciding to buy Apple. The Apple Watch stuff was also quite interesting. Your Apple Watch is becoming more responsive now, which was
faster. It's faster. A lot of people have said, "Wow, that's fantastic," which suggests that it really has been
an issue.
But I would, I mean, I haven't used an Apple Watch.
I'm not a user either, so for me,
I've looked at it briefly, but people I've spoken to said, that was much needed, the speed and performance improvements. It's been how long now since the Apple Watch came out? It must be coming off for 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
I wonder when they're going to do a hardware refresh. Presumably, when the iPhone is announced later this year.
Yeah, the new iPhone.
Which is September, I think they usually announce that.
More time, more reason to spend money, right?
But I learned one thing in this business over the years is never buy the first generation of a hardware product.
Yeah.
If you bought the first iPhone, you would have been disappointed. If you bought the first Apple Watch, I think you've been disappointed. Although the amount of time it's taken for Apple Watch 2 to come, at least you don't have buyer's remorse 6 months later.
And I love the fact that the software obviously works on the older devices, and I think that's always been one of Apple's strengths. I mean, my old Mac computer at home will be able to run the new software. So you continually get the benefits of new operating system and new
software. I think my 2007 iMac is no longer going to be
supported. That was
which still runs fine actually on whatever, I think it's running El Capitan. And it runs fine, although I did swap it out with an SSD with your assistance actually.
Now that makes a huge difference.
It does. In fact, I recommend that to anyone with an older laptop or computer that's running slowly. Just swap the hard drive out with an SSD and it'll be like a new machine. It really is.
And if you have one of the older Macs with a CD-ROM drive, you can actually have the CD-ROM drive taken out and replaced with another storage drive. I know a lot of people SSD or SSD
or hard drive
or hard drive to give you two drives in your Mac if you don't need. Who's used optical drives?
No, you don't need them anymore.
It's crazy. Crazy how times have changed.
Indeed I'm still not ready to go to a laptop though with just one port.
No, neither am I. In fact, I'm close to buying a USB 3 port extender just so I can get 7 or 8 or 9 USB 3 ports, because there's so many things I always want to copy and paste and plug in and leave plugged in.
I mean, I'm just looking at your MacBook Pro here. You've got four things connected to it. You've got an HDMI, you've got a mouse, USB, you've got the mic for this podcast, and the power. I mean, you couldn't do this on a MacBook. The new one.
No, you can't. Unless you get one of those adapters, but again,
you're
going to
lose the adapter.
First generation product, I'm not confident with the bandwidth throughput on those yet. At least, I know each of my ports have got their own bus on the motherboard, so they'll perform like they should.
Anyway. Good. Well, that covers the news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week is an obvious one, and that is the chief executive officer of Vodacom, whose salary doubled.
Oh, nice.
That's in the 2016 financial year.
I asked for a double salary the other day and it was refused, so I don't know.
Why? What, what horrible boss do you have?
Anyway. Myself.
So Shamil's salary going up to 22 million rand. That included about 14 or 15 million rand in bonus payments, short-term incentive bonus. And let's admit or say up front that Vodacom's results for the 2016 financial year were fantastic. So that's clearly, you know, where most of his package has come from this time around. But 22 million rand, good money. Good money.
Very good.
But Vodacom is firing on all cylinders at the moment, so maybe it is completely justified.
Well, it's nice to see that kind of thing, yeah, if the company is performing.
Yeah. Loser this week. Have you had a chance to see the new Top Gear yet? I know we spoke about it briefly in the last show.
I did. I watched parts of it. I kind of just scrapped through, watched the, you know, kind of just see all the things that I was hearing about.
Yeah.
And everything I heard about, just the crew not quite sparking it, has been true. You know, it's entertaining, but it's not the old Top Gear by any means.
No, it's not. And
it's a different show.
Yeah, the second episode, or was it the third episode? I think it's the third episode. It achieved its lowest ratings, all but one, in the entire history of Top Gear. So it was one show, apparently, where Clarkson was in charge. It was rated lower. But apart from that, it's the second worst Top Gear ever made.
Sure.
So not things are not looking good for them. And I see they're putting Chris Evans, who everyone's complaining about, into the background a bit and getting some of the lesser-known presenters to host some of the segments and stuff.
Still an odd bunch for me. I don't know. I mean,
it is hell.
You can't top the Clarkson gang. You know, you can't... The trio there, they obviously have something very special. But I would still have thought that there would be some other faces that would be more, I guess, entertainment value, you know, more commercial entertainment value, global entertainment value, not just UK-based entertainment value.
Yeah, the thing that grates me about it is this is a British motoring show, and the best anchor on the new motoring show is an American, Matt LeBlanc. That just tells you there's something wrong.
I would have thought Jay from Friends would have been one of the headline presenters of Top Gear. I would have laughed at you if you told me this 10 years ago.
Anyway, so that's our loser of the week, the new Top Gear, and I'm actually giving up on it. I'm not going to watch the rest of the season. Cool. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So with all the new hardware that I've been playing with, we speak about it every week, and often flying out a drone, shooting video. I mean, I'm doing a lot more video these days. The one thing I do need is portable power all the time.
Yeah.
So what I did was I bought this battery bank. It's a 15,000 milliamp hour. And the reason why I got this one is it's the biggest one in the range that they had. And it's been absolutely phenomenal. It's a brand called Tyson. And I guess it works the same as any other battery bank. I mean, it doesn't have any other major features. It charges your stuff. It's got two USB ports. One is a 1 amp and one is a 2 amp, which is great
to
charge. And also to faster charge your devices. So I'll plug my phone on there and it'll charge within an hour. But the real thing about this, the real beauty about this is the 15,000 milliamp hour. I mean, I've been charging my phone every day for the last week and I'm still on 50%. I've just been charging it as I see the battery goes down to 50-60%. And it's been really handy. I've also charged some GoPro batteries with it, which I think is really handy. Especially if you're out in the bush, which I'm planning on doing in the next 2-3 months, we're going to be shooting a documentary there. This is going to be very handy, so I can charge everything. I've got a solar power panel also over there. I think we spoke about that too, which is handy, but obviously this stores the power and you can do multiple charges.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I bought a 10,000 milliamp last year sometime, and it's essential for keeping your phones charged. I just wish, we were saying before the show, I just wish that you could buy a really big battery bank that you could use to charge your laptop with.
Yeah.
Maybe you can, I don't know. But I'm talking, you know, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000
proper battery bank.
So you can get another, you know, double the battery of your laptop. And so many batteries these days, like the MacBooks we're using here, for example, you can't replace the battery.
No.
I used to love my old, I had an old ThinkPad back in the 90s. I think it was running Windows 95 and DOS. It was they called it the Butterfly ThinkPad. I had the extended battery pack on this thing.
Yes.
And you just slid it in the bottom. This battery lasted for 12 hours of real-world use.
Yeah.
And you could just slide another one if it ran out. So you could go for 24 hours without... it was fantastic. But I wish they'd do that more these days. I would actually consider getting a Windows laptop if I could buy an extendable battery. You know, I don't mind. If I'm on the road, I don't mind if the battery sticks out the same distance as the keyboard on the back, for example.
Happy to sacrifice portability.
Yeah.
I mean, like the iPhone, a lot of the iPhones have this power pack that you put on. It's an Apple-made power pack.
I've seen that.
I'm surprised nobody's done something for MacBook, especially considering a lot of these guys...
There probably is a product. We just haven't come across it.
Maybe. If there is anybody, please let us know.
Please let us know. We'll go buy it. We'll go buy it.
Sign us up.
info@techcentral.co.za is how you can reach us. Cool. My pick this week is the new Sony smartphone. It's their new, what do you call it, high-end, their new flagship.
Flagship.
And it's really good. It's I'm a big fan of the Sony brand. I actually bought the Sony Xperia Z5 late last year. I've heard there's been a few issues with it, but generally I'm very happy with the Z5, although Marshmallow took a bit long to get to this market. But the Sony Xperia X really feels like they've taken the last Z lineup and refined it and polished it. It's really good. A couple of interesting things to note. They've done away with the difference between the compact and the full size.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people like the compact device because of its size, 4.5 or 4.6 inches, I think, on the compact. The Z lineup is being phased out, which I think is quite a controversial move. So the Z5 and Z5 Compact and Z5 Premium are the last in that lineup, and they're to be replaced with this, which is the Xperia X, and then they've got the Xperia XA, which is a more mid-tier device, and then they've got a larger screen. I think it's quite, I stand to be corrected here, I think it's the XA Premium or the XA Ultra, which is a 6-inch device, but also a mid-tier device. So this has got a Snapdragon 820 in it, so it's a very high-end processor.
Yeah.
Snappy as hell, and the couple of things that really stand out for me. It goes back to Sony's design, and the Z5 was a great from a design perspective as well. But this really is a compact, thin, lightweight device that really oozes that Sony Xperia and Sony Vaio.
Yes,
design ethos,
quality that you
brilliant experience. Bright screen, the fingerprint reader, which is a bugbear of mine on the Z5, it just doesn't read your fingers all that well. It's absolutely brilliant.
Is it on the
without
side?
Fail, that's it opens up every time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's on the side of the phone, on the same place as the power button, and it really that's unlocking.
I would use my thumb for that because that's how I would hold my phone.
It's the best place for a fingerprint reader on a device, I think.
And also I'm just sitting here, what I can see is I hated with the previous versions the glass backing. I didn't like that. But this to me, this would make me buy it if I see something that's kind of a matte colour, a bit more metal at the back. This is beautiful.
So I'm going to criticise it for one thing, is that the camera sticks out ever so slightly, which it didn't on the Z5.
With a slight bezel around it, slightly raised.
It doesn't. It's so minor that you probably won't notice it. But you know, this is Sony we're talking about. We don't expect the camera to stick out at all.
What's the reason that they say?
I asked them. It's the same thickness, I believe, as the Z5, but and it's the same sensor. But they've added some extra technology from their Alpha lineup of cameras, something to do with autofocus, if I recall. It'll focus on a device that's moving, changing depth in real time, and apparently that technology has impacted the depth of the camera so that it sticks out ever so slightly. They didn't want to make a thicker device, but that's a very minor criticism of what is a fantastic phone. The only other design decision on this phone that struck me as odd was they haven't gone for USB-C. It's still a micro USB, which is a bit odd since the rest of the market's moved to USB-C already.
That would have been a nice addition.
But otherwise, it's a great phone. I will have a full review up on Tech Central sometime in the next few weeks. But so far, it looks to be getting around 9.5 out of 10. Very good device.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just the first set. I like that look and feel.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. It's nothing flashy about it either. It's not like a Galaxy S7 trying to say, hey, notice me.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it's a phone that just gets on with the job of what it's meant to be, and it's a phone.
Yeah. No, that's only the one that I would get this color to. It's beautiful.
And the 5-inch phone, I thought it'd be a bit small for me, but it's actually fine. You know, the compact form factor was too small for me, and a lot of people rave about it, particularly women.
Yeah.
Love the compact form factor, the 4.5-inch, 4.6-inch size.
So
this might be too big for those compact users, but you know, it's got a very small bezel, so it fits in your hand very nicely.
And the flat edge also, I mean, with the iPhone I've got a case on, but it's rounded and it's a lot smoother. It slips out of your hand without a case. You wouldn't want to put a case in this feels like it needs to be like this all the time.
And obviously, the problem is you definitely want to put a case on that thing.
This one is still waterproof, and
I think it is. I need to check that,
but
I presume it is. It's got a special flap there to cover the.
Then it's probably.
To cover the SIM card slot. So I'm sure it's waterproof, yeah.
Very nice.
Cool. Well, that's the Sony Xperia X, and it's on sale in South Africa already. I think the retail price is around 11 or 12. So it's in line with the premium pricing for handsets.
And how much memory is in there?
64, I think it is.
Yeah. Nice.
Cool. So. Is that our show? No, it's not.
Quiz results.
We won't forget this week. let me kick off with the first question. So we asked, who is providing most of the money for 4DI Capital's new tech fund? And the answer, of course, as we mentioned during the show, is MMI Holdings.
The second question, which company other than Microsoft reportedly made a bid to buy LinkedIn? The answer, and we spoke about this, Salesforce.com.
Question three, Naspers is said to be planning to sell which online auctions business? And the answer is Poland's Allegro.
Fourth question. Sony has launched a new flagship Android smartphone in South Africa this past week. What is it called? And that is the Xperia X.
And the last question. What is the name of Apple's new desktop operating system announced at WWDC earlier this week? Now, of course, they've changed the name of their desktop OS from Mac OS X to just Mac OS, lowercase M OS, one word.
Okay. Yeah.
And but we're looking for the code name for the OS, and I think we have to thank Apple for not coming up with a name like El Capitan again. This time around it's called Sierra,
another scenic mountain range, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere. Indeed, and reminds me of course of the old Sierra Online back in the day in the 80s, the red games.
Wasn't like that Leisure Suite Larry? I remember that.
Leisure Suite Larry.
You can never forget that Sierra logo coming up before the games
with the mountain. Yeah, yes, exactly. Yes. Leisure Suit Larry, Police Quest, Space Quest, yes. King's Quest,
Monkey Island,
and of course Quest for Glory, Heroes Quest, which was brilliant. Monkey Island, I think, was someone else. Monkey Island, I think, was someone else. I forget who. LucasArts, maybe.
LucasArts, you're right. LucasArts, yeah.
But Sierra Online, yeah. So I spent many years of my youth playing those Quest games and typing in
low-bit graphic computers. Yeah. It was.
Do you remember the password in Leisure Suit Larry?
No, I don't.
I still remember it to this day. To get upstairs to the prostitute. Ken sent me.
Ken sent me.
In that dodgy bar downstairs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good.
Oh, I love those games.
Oh, they don't make them like they used to.
No, indeed.
There was real soul in them. Yeah. Real soul.
And fans enjoy them so much. You know, there's whole remakes of those old games. All the King's Quest games have been remade by, some of them have been remade by fans. And there's actually new episodes of King's Quest that have come out. You can download them for free off the internet, and they're good. They're really good.
Nice. Well, speaking of old games, we'll probably talk about this next week. I'm still playing with it, but Mario World Builder, which is allows you to build old Mario platforms, and you can play them.
Oh, cool!
It's very cool. Yeah, I haven't played with it, but I've got the info. I'm going to start playing next year. So, yeah.
Cool.
Old games for the win.
We should actually have a game segment on the show sometimes if there's some decent stuff. I play the odd video game.
Yeah, definitely.
PC based mainly.
Let's think about that. Yeah, let's do.
Cool. Well, that's our show for this week. Coming to you from Nav World in Randburg for a change. We'll be back next week. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, please send us a mail. Email address is info@techcentral.co.za. If you know about those battery extenders for laptops, do let us know about them. And that's it from Rechot and myself. Until next time, take care. Cheers.
Ciao.